I think they like you, Steve.
Thursday, okay? Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go.
Good morning, Chicago, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, Steve Cochran Show, Dave Ennett's here. Mary Sandberg is back. Mary Vandeville, Steve Grzanich, and of course, Steve Cochran. Got a huge show lined up for you today until 10 o'clock. Larry Wirt's going to join us later this hour to talk about the passing of Warner Saunders. It's really sad to see that news yesterday. As a young Columbia College graduate, I had the good fortune of moderating a panel with Warner Saunders, and he was the first guy. This was 1996, and he was the first guy to point out to this young Wonderlake kid that there's inequality in the news, and you have to think of all the sources and all the voices when you put together a news story. And that was something I'm like, what? There's different voices in the news? It's not just suits and ties? There's Warner Saunders, who I always remember that moment, and sad to hear the news of Warner Saunders. But Larry Wirt, who was his boss for a long time, will join us coming up in the hour.
Yeah, good man. And I got to know him when he was covering sports for a while. I think people forget, but for a while he was on the sports beat.
That's
a very versatile broadcast.
Unbelievable. And he was a talk show host. He did a lot of public affairs and, of course, a 10 o'clock anchor over at NBC. So we'll talk with Larry later in the show. Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein. We will also have Dean Richards and the cast of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, as well as the swap meet is back today with Greg Flamm, if you have any questions.
Yes.
And we have these great tickets to give away as part of the swap meet, which is The Price is Right is live. The Price is Right live at the Chicago Theater coming up, and this is going to be in February. But The Price is Right is coming to the Chicago Theater. How about
That's very exciting.
And we have tickets to give
you
away.
The actual TV show?
It's going
to be here?
It's going to be here at the Chicago Theater.
I can totally see Pete and Molly putting on costumes and going to
$1.
Yeah,
right.
You don't think Super Joe would?
Super Joe would do it.
Yeah, Joe Romano, come on down.
Yes, indeed. My cousin actually won a car on Price is Right.
No way.
And he lost. He lost the showcase showdown by $1. Oh. $1, Bob.
Was it with Bob or Drew?
With Drew. Yeah, it was recent. It was a couple years ago, maybe.
Oh, man. That's so cool, though.
Yeah,
I know. Like when you win those prizes, I knew somebody that won a hot tub. They just drop it off at your house in the yard. Like you, it just
Are you living
up
in the hills
day.
Of Tennessee?
What yeah, like there? They just dropped off their Price is Right hot tub and they had to figure out something
no
to
installation,
do with it.
Huh?
Yeah, nope. It just was in the front yard.
Boy, Mayor, how you feeling? Listen to you. A little nasally.
I know. I apologize for that, but I feel really good.
I don't think you need to apologize for having a cold.
Yeah. Well, apology accepted.
Technically, I have bronchitis, so I just don't want people thinking I wasn't here. But I'm on antibiotics, so I'm safe. And I also have some Robitussin with codeine. If anyone wants to pay me for a little, I can give tip you off.
You know, if you're going to be a drug dealer, do it live on the show.
She always has Benadryl. We can always take
calls. I do have Benadryl, too. Yep.
Yeah, what is the deal with you and Benadryl? You carry Benadryl like you own the company.
Who has allergies in the family?
Well, I have allergies, but you never know when you're going to have something itchy or can't breathe or if a cat shows up, you know, so you got to be ready at all times for a Benadryl.
I don't even carry them. My kid's allergic to peanuts.
Well, maybe you don't like your kid that much. Who knows?
He carries it in his wallet all the time.
It's the only thing. I don't carry Kleenex or anything like that, but I always have Benadryl.
How do you carry pills in your wallet?
I don't know. My son does. He always has Benadryl in his pocket or his wallet in case he has a reaction, which is smart.
Yeah. We're getting out of the studio tomorrow one more time. We're going to Brookfield. We're still doing this?
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay. Mary's Morning Mix-Up. That's the name of the joint?
That's the name of the joint, and Mary and I will both be there.
Yes.
And so it'll be three Marys, which will outnumber everybody else.
Is there an original Mary on hold there, ready to be on the show?
Yeah, Mary is going to join us.
Okay. Mary, the owner of the mix-up.
Mm-hmm. 6 to 10 tomorrow morning. Details at WGNradio.com/events. If you're going out to breakfast anywhere near Brookfield, come on by. And it's time for the top six at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
with the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
I think we can all agree that one of the most attractive things about the governor's race are two billionaires fighting with each other. Rauner and Pritzker want to keep their offshore money a secret. Both candidates for governor have released vague and incomplete information about how much money they have and where it is.
That's politics today.
Both have declined to provide their entire federal and state income tax returns. And both have investments in opaque offshore tax havens, holdings that are more extensive than previously known.
This is the problem when you have a president who sets precedent. If that's for now, now what politician will ever release their tax
returns? If the president doesn't do it, how can we hold anybody to it?
Right.
Next. FBI chief says it was the usual process followed in the Brett Kavanaugh investigation, but included the fact that the White House narrowed the scope of the investigation when grilled by Kamala Harris, the Democratic senator from California, believed to be a shoo-in to run for president in 2020. Saying the White House narrowed the scope of the investigation may narrow the chance that Chris Wray keeps his job. We'll see where that fallout happens today. Next. Hurricane Michael. We won't know till the sun is completely up in Florida how bad it is, but it certainly looks like it hit exactly where we thought it would hit. And great job by the forecasters at the Hurricane Center. Having said that, it was more small towns than big towns that got hit, but Panama City took a huge blast of 120-mile-an-hour sustained winds. That's a larger town, and we just don't know. We know there's two dead so far. Obviously, I hope the hit number doesn't go up. The damage is amazing. And again, once the sun comes up, we'll know more.
I heard somebody on with Roe, I can't remember the name of the reporter, but you know, he's an hour and a half after the hurricane hit, and he was in that area, and the because the winds were so strong that everything was dry already. Even
how
though
bizarre.
It hit, that's crazy to me. So
yeah, and they said the trees are stripped like a tornado. When a tornado comes through, the bark gets peeled off the trees, and said it looked like that. That's how strong the wind was. Next, Tex Winter died. Tex, the champion of the Bulls and the innovator of the Bulls triangle offense, died at 96. You know, they never picked up my rectangular parallelogram offense that I wanted them to roll with.
They tried it for a preseason game.
They said we're going to need eight guys.
Yes, well, that was,
that was part of the problem. Did you ever meet Tex?
Yep. You know, Tex Winter was the head basketball coach at Northwestern when I was a student there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he spent 4 years there. And, yeah, that the program wasn't where it is now, but they were still a pretty competitive team, had some big wins under him. But he had great success as a college coach. He'd been at Kansas State, took that. He was a head coach at the age of 30 at Marquette, which is really remarkable. And, of course, then 66 years later, he passed away. I mean, he had an unbelievable career. And if you remember, Steve, Jerry Krause championed getting Tex Winter into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Took forever to get him in. He finally got in on his eighth time on the ballot.
Well, he comes from that generation where you don't brag about yourself.
No, that's exactly. He never did.
Next, Warner Saunders died at the age of 83 on Tuesday. Warner, good guy, and knew him for a long time. And, of course, he was lead anchor at NBC for a lot of years. We're going to have Larry Wirt, who runs this company and ran Channel 5 for a lot of years, talk about Warner this morning. He'll be on later. Maybe we'll call Anna DeVlantis as well because she co-anchored with him quite often. And had a nice tweet last night in his memory. And then this scandal in the wine world. 23 new master sommeliers have had their titles taken away. Whoa. They've been cheating. How do you cheat at wine?
I don't know how you can cheat on this.
And Dave?
Too much swirl?
I don't know.
Extra sniffing?
Have you ever seen what they have to go through, the test to become a master sommelier?
No, I figured
There was a documentary.
We watched
No,
that.
I don't know. Oh. The documentary about it is fascinating. Yeah. It's very stressful.
So we'll find out about the cheating. And Steve, I'd like to get some information on the Soyuz near disaster with the American astronaut that happened in the last few hours. Mm-hmm. If you could fill us in on that coming up.
All right.
Nick DiGilio joins us. And Nick, how are you?
All right.
A couple of new movies coming out this weekend, but what did you and your mom and dad see?
We saw A Star Is Born.
And?
Oh, I loved it.
As good as
I
we hear?
I loved it, my pick. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Easily. And it was a big deal for my mom. My mom adores the Barbra Streisand version. It's like one of her favorite movies of all time. And so she was going to be hypercritical of it, and she absolutely loved it. And I thought it was great. I was just astounded. I'm not a big Lady Gaga fan at all, but she's really great in the movie. And I was kind of, I had lower expectations on it, but it blew me away. I cried. I was totally involved in it. I thought the music was great. It's one of the best acted movies of the year. And Bradley Cooper is, I think, either going to tie or break a record for most Oscar nominations for one person in one year. What? Because he co-wrote it, he directed it, he starred in it, and he wrote some of the songs for it. I think he's going to get at least five nominations for picture, for director, for actor, and for music, and he deserves it. He's phenomenal, and it's a great movie, and we all three of us loved it.
They're predicting record sales for the soundtrack, which I think is out Tuesday, is that right?
No, it's out already.
Oh, it came out this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I've got it. So
it's
yeah,
all over the radio. That song "Shallow" is really good.
Yeah,
but I didn't know the soundtrack had been released, so I could get it and play it at my parties that I have at my tree fort in the Nick DiGiulio fan club meetings.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Anything else? Anything else coming out this weekend of note?
Oh yeah, First Man. This is the movie about Neil Armstrong Ryan Gosling, and the follow-up to La La Land for director Damien Chazelle, and all I've ever heard is that it's great and it must be seen in IMAX. Like, this is one of those movies that you have to see in IMAX. And I can't wait to see it. I hear nothing but good things about it. My buddy Eric, who is our correspondent for the film festival circuit, saw it in Toronto and said it's easily one of the best movies of the year.
Bad Times at the El Royale looks like it could be entertaining, but I'm
cannot wait.
Oh, good. Okay, because I thought you were going to say it sucks.
No, I cannot wait. The guy who wrote and directed this movie is Drew Goddard, who has worked in the past with Joss Whedon, and he wrote and directed one of the best funny horror movies in the past 20 years called Cabin in the Woods. He wrote The Martian, and this is his writing and directing. For first time, he's written and directed something since Cabin in the Woods, and it's about seven strangers who meet at this sort of rundown hotel between the California and Nevada line, and first of all, Jeff Bridges is in it, who's my favorite actor on the planet. And
even
John
more
Hamm,
so than
Dakota,
me.
I'm sorry?
More than me? More, Jeff Bridges?
Well, he wasn't as good as you were in Grumpy Old Men.
Right.
I know that much.
Just want to check out.
Jeff Bridges, John Hamm, Dakota Johnson, Nick Offerman, Chris Hemsworth. It's a great cast. And the First Man and the El Royale are both, we're going to see both of those on Saturday with my folks because they're both, I didn't want to pick one over the other because they both look so great.
By the way, just so you know, understand Nick's commitment. Even if it was sunny in 85, he'd see two movies on a Saturday.
That's true.
All right, quickly, pop culture bulletin board stuff. This is the stuff where I always ask Nick, what's driving you crazy now? And it's Grey's Anatomy?
Well, yeah, Grey's Anatomy, this is its 15th season. What the hell's wrong with this world?
It is
15 seasons.
Yeah, shut it down. What story could they possibly be doing that they haven't done?
I mean, they've all slept with each other multiple times.
Yeah.
I mean, what else are they going to do? So that got me thinking, what shows do you think, Steve, stuck around too long? Like, really?
Oh, that's a good text
outstayed
question.
Their welcome.
That's a good
that
text 70 question.
Show.
312-981-7200. What show stuck around too long? There's your text question. I don't know. Give me your top couple.
Well, The Simpsons, I think, has been on too long. I know that's perennial, but it hasn't been good for many years.
Okay.
I think The Office, once Steve Carell left, it really dropped in quality.
Yeah, well, for that matter, then, after MASH and Archie Bunker's Place.
Yeah. I think The Walking Dead has outstayed its welcome by at least a few seasons. Let me see. There's a lot more here. American Idol was on for too long, I think.
And then they brought it back.
Bones was on too long. That show was on for like 43 seasons. And the other thing that kills me about some of these shows that have been on for so long, like, I don't know how many times I've gone, wait a minute, that show is still on? And when you don't know anybody who watches it, I'll give you a prime example. I think JAG was on for 43 seasons. And I remember, like, about at season 20, I was like, who the hell is watching this show? Because nobody I knew watched it. I didn't watch it. And yet, JAG was on for 53 seasons. And
43, so, 53. It keeps going up.
It was endless.
All right, hold on, buddy. Longest Yard is his next film club screening, Tuesday, November 13th at the AMC Rosemont. You can follow Nick's Film Club on Facebook and follow Nick every night from 1 to 5 in the morning. And he's doing fine work when he's awake. We'll come back with your headlines in just a moment. And Chuck Todd on the way, along with a bunch of political stuff to cover. Oh, we got a busy show. 720 WGN.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting. Monster. Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you.
640, Steve Cochran Show. Host to Meet the Press, the podcast, the 1947 podcast, almost said 1847. It's been on a long time and not quite that long. And MTP Daily, Chuck Todd. Good morning, Chuck.
No, good morning, Mr. Cochran.
You know, I have no expectations of Donald Trump to do the right thing, so I don't want to get buried in the, oh, he went to the Pennsylvania rally, or the rally last night instead of doing the right thing and being presidential about the terrible storm in Florida. So let me move on to the other story. Saudi Arabia and the potential murder of a Washington Post reporter. Is this a big foreign policy deal as we think it is, aside from the personal tragedy?
Well, I think it's going to become an even bigger foreign policy deal, because I think you're going to see the potential for the split that you saw essentially between everybody and Trump on Russia.
Right.
You may see this between everybody and Trump on Saudi Arabia. There's a very close personal relationship that the president's son-in-law has developed with the crown prince there, who's known these days as MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. And this idea, you know, they have this, and, you know, the president, he respects powerful brutality.
Right.
Right? He doesn't, he would say he doesn't condone it, but he's always talked about it. Oh, they're killers. You know, you need a killer every once in a while. And you know, he would say he wasn't referring to actual killing. He would be referring to just being tough. But you see, the president has already been hesitant to condemn Saudi Arabia. But boy, when you see the corporate world running away from them overnight, when you saw that there was, you know, Saudi Arabia rolled out this tech conference and all of these tech, whoa, we didn't know anything about this. We're not participating. You have a bipartisan set of senators saying that investigation should be conducted because this could trigger the Magnitsky Act, essentially, which was done after after the Russians went and killed somebody.
Right.
In this case, they want to see this investigated with the Saudis. So, look, I think this is a slow boil, though. I mean, you know, I think we're looking probably weeks down the road when this ends up coming to a head. But this is, I would say that we are foreshadowing what is going to be a very, where the president is going to have to get dragged into punishing Saudi Arabia.
Is there anything to the fact that the Saudis may have financed him in part along with the Russians in the 90s, so he's concerned about his money problems being found out?
Oh, I think it's more near term than that. I mean, don't forget, it is the Gulf state, I believe it's the Qatar government, who bailed out Kushner's company in that building that he owns on Fifth Avenue in New York, when he desperately needed a new tenant, a company that's partially owned by the Qatari government, paid a 99-year lease up front. Pretty convenient, right?
Yeah.
To pay your rent.
We have some of those deals here in Chicago, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I tell you this, I never paid my rent 99 days in advance, let alone 99 years.
Not a good call.
Not usually. So the point is that there's a lot of business and financial ties between the Saudis. And look, this is also, the Saudis have forged really close ties with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel. So they believe they can get away with this because they believe they bought themselves cover with Egypt, Israel, and the United States, the leaders of that. Basically, at the end of the day, they care enough about Saudi Arabia as the check on Iran that will look the other way.
Chuck,
I don't know. I don't know if official Washington, if the diplomatic world is going to let the United States look the other way on that.
How much of this is an,
cause and effect. When you run a campaign that's America First, and America has always sort of been the one that is that's held up the norms, that has kept the world.
I'm the cop on the street. I felt like we were the cop on the street around the world. When
so
it
why?
Comes to
and you see this with the ex Interpol chief in China. You see this with Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Syria. There seems to be a more rogue state, or just this lawlessness that's happening around the world. Does that have a correlation to the idea that the way that Trump is positioning the United States of America?
I certainly see it. All right, Pat, I'm not going to sit here. I mean, obviously, it's certainly you sit there and you're like, huh, ever since the president said, you know what, look, we're not going to get involved in other people's foreign policies. We're not going to get involved in other people's, domestic policy. We're going to worry about ourselves first. There is that, I think there is that sense that there is going to be, if the United States isn't there to sort of organize the Western world to condemn these practices, right? And right now the United States is the organizer. Without them, it's not like the UK steps in. It's not like, I think sometimes they try, but they don't have the same effect. If you don't have the United States as the organizing mechanism of the sort of the Western world to condemn this thuggery, whether if it's in the Philippines, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, China, and these sort of brutal sort of autocratic tactics, then I think you do see it's what I think a lot of these leaders see, that there is less downside than there used to be. And what's interesting here, though, I think the most effective tool on the Saudis might end up being corporate America, because at the end of the day, these countries do need corporate America more than they need diplomatic America.
It's all about the money, sure. And the other curiosity of this story to me is whether it's political expediency, inequality of importance, when maybe it's not. I guess it's all how you look at it. We still got missing kids who haven't been reunited with their parents. The White House blows off the deadline to get it done. And nobody in the Senate's talking about this story.
No, but I go back to raw politics there. Nobody nobody who supports the president is asking him to deal with this. So it there's no political penalty. This is a case where to me it's pretty obvious why the president hasn't felt the need to be on time with this. There's no political penalty in his own base for doing that.
They must be so proud.
This is right. This is what November, this is why the elections have consequences, and we're going to find out what those consequences are. And then at that point, then we'll see if behavior changes based on the consequences.
I don't know how you guys decided in your own editorial meetings prior to last Sunday how to handle the New York Times year and a half piece on Trump and his father and potential financial crimes. Mm-hmm. But the story went away very quickly. Any take on that?
Well, look, I say this as somebody who's doing his own long dive into President Trump's background, having to do with sort of his political world. These things take time. As a reporter, let me explain sort of the logistical reason why this didn't immediately become, pop up in all these other news organizations, is that at the end of the day, you got to be able to confirm it. It just takes time. This is a project. It's hard. So it is hard to go on the air going to the bank with some other news organizations reporting if you can't verify
some
facts. And this is not, I'm not, I I'm well aware of how difficult this is. Here's where I think this story will get legs, is in a couple of months. If Democrats hold the House, then you will see investigative committees in the House use this time story as a roadmap to try to look at its finances. You'll see the state of New York try to use it as a roadmap to look at the tax structures and tax loopholes. I mean, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see laws change, because there's nothing. I think the more I've talked to some accountant friends on this, there may not be anything. There may not be a lot he technically did that was illegal. It's just you can't believe this was legal,
right?
I think you'll see. Yes, those are different. And I think you will see some law changes in the state of New York based on, there'll be the Trump tax law changes type of thing that sort of make this more difficult, what he pulled up. But the whole inheritance, the whole way of dealing with family inheritance and handing down family money, this has actually been a larger fight inside of Congress. I mean, I think you may see Democrats take up the inheritance tax again, really more as a way of targeting Trump, as a messaging tool to target Trump and his inherited wealth.
Chuck Todd, you on MTP Daily today?
I assume I am.
Unless something changes in a noon meeting and meet the press on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sprint to Election Day is on.
All right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate
it. All right, buddy. See you.
That's Chuck Todd. All right, 6:55, Steve Cochran Show, and the most valuable person on the planet, 7:20 this morning. We've got the lead from, is it the lead from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory coming in? I think that's right.
Noah Weisberg.
Alonzo Bowden, very funny guy, been an A-list comic for years and years and years. He's going to be at the Chicago Improv, he'll be in. Dean is in New York, so we'll do more on entertainment remote style. We got some stuff to give away for The Price is Right, and Breakfast with the Blackhawk this morning features John Hayden.
Just so you know, Alonzo would have been in studio tomorrow, but we're going to be in Brookfield, so he can't make that work. So he's just on the
phone. Because he doesn't have
a car? Yeah, because he's doing GNTV in the morning.
You're right on the expressway, I'm just saying.
Typical Channel 9 getting in the way of us.
I know. So.
TV shows that stayed too long, that's your text question of the day. Joni Loves Chachi. How long was that on?
Yeah, that was not on.
I feel like that was on.
I don't know.
Too long, but it was only on a season.
A couple years, maybe.
I would say maybe you would say that about Happy Days, because Happy Days.
Happy Days also on the list. Remember in the end of Happy Days, you knew it was too long because Fonzie was in space. Remember that?
They were in high school forever.
I'll tell you, yeah, that's true, because Richie wasn't that smart.
Joni Loves Chachi was on for one season.
Love the show, but I know that Simpsons gets a lot of flack, but I would also say The Family Guy. And I love The Family Guy, but I feel like it's been on 2 or 3 years without people.
Always takes a step too far. Yeah. It's always a step too far. Funny show.
It's
but
funny,
just when you go, that's great. I didn't need that.
I'm so uncomfortable watching that show.
Yeah,
it's just always.
One step too far.
I will say one thing that the Disney Channel does right, which is sounds weird, is all their shows are a maximum of 2 years.
Yeah, when they get rid of it because kids have ADD.
Kids, they actually naturally get too old for the roles they're playing, and so they cycle them in and out. So
don't they have a show called Puberty on the Disney Channel?
That's what I was going to say. It's nothing more uncomfortable than Disney Channel actors going through puberty.
And then they all go on Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars made the list. So did your show, Survivor.
No, Survivor can stay. Dancing with the Stars probably should go.
Yeah, they're out of celebrities.
Yeah, they're running out of people. Survivor's awesome still.
I've never watched an episode.
Oh, somebody just texted the Wahlburgers. I disagree. Wahlburgers has not run its course. That is quality program.
I don't watch it.
It sounds like
the Benadryl talking to me.
Mark Wahlberg and his family, they have restaurants called Wahlburgers.
Yeah, and they do a reality show around the Wahlburgers.
Yeah, it's great. Their mom is she's amazing.
How about everything on reality TV has lasted too long? How about that?
Would you put Keeping Up with the Kardashians on that list?
Of course.
Well, the only reason is they seem to continually redevelop their character lines, so they have.
Well,
so it is interesting
hold on a second.
To watch.
Did you hit your head yesterday?
No.
They continue to redevelop their character lines.
They add Kanye West, they add Tristan Thompson, they add other people
There's marriages, divorces, kids are born, new product lines.
Right, so new Kardashians.
It's
Kylie
wild.
Gets older,
sometimes you see a one shot of them on a stool talking, and then sometimes they're in their living room talking.
More nuance
than that. And then sometimes they're in their SUV.
I actually like in their show, they eat. So they're always eating.
That's great.
And a lot of the other reality shows, people don't eat. I like watching the eating. A lot of salads to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of
I would rather be trapped on an island where I could only see Survivor than watch one episode of The Kardashians.
Nah,
how about the Cavallari show?
Oh, very Cavallari.
That's excellent program.
I can't trash that. Sandberg would murder me.
She would kill you.
Supernatural, too long. Any show featuring Roseanne, too long. You know what's interesting about this Roseanne thing? John Goodman has come out and really defended her. The Goodman side of the Roseanne show, what's it called?
The Connors.
Starts next week.
I believe that's right, yeah. And he was on defending Roseanne the other night on maybe Colbert, maybe The Tonight Show. We're all interchangeable.
I'm glad he is.
Yeah, and said that she gave up a lot as far as ownership of the show goes.
Dumb tweet. She got a dumb racist tweet that got her fired. So I don't think that... That disqualifies your friendships with her.
Yeah,
you know, if you're John Goodman.
Sure. Yeah. Law and Order, all of them.
Yeah,
too long. The Office, too long. We talked about that. Modern Family, too long. I agree with that.
I don't agree with
that. I totally agree with that.
I agree. I watched last night's episode
was hilarious.
And
him
the characters
going and
are
teaching,
getting too old.
Oh,
yeah. And the kids.
Phil going to be a teacher at...
too cold.
Phil is hilarious.
Phil is hilarious, but the kids need to go to school and never come back.
And the one kid's, they never do anything in Phil's family.
Yeah, it's not
what do you mean? Luke's going to community college.
Oh, finally.
And Big Bang Theory.
And now Phil's teaching there.
Ending, but long overdue for its ending. 7 o'clock, news next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here, and I'll talk to you guys for a couple minutes, but I'm waiting on a call from the president. He was expected to call me at any time
now. It's that time, the time of the week.
Yeah, he checks in occasionally. Eric, what's the name of your company? How about I turn your microphone on? Now tell me what's the name of your company.
Still AL Media.
Still, since I asked?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Pat?
Next Generation Strategies.
And the Lincoln Forum?
Yes.
Happening?
Yes.
Website?
LincolnForum.org. We're going to do a media panel right before the election.
Okay.
And we have two or three things lined up after that, including a mayoral debate, probably in January.
Speaking of debates, gubernatorial debates continue, and now the headline story of the day is both candidates don't want to say where their money's hidden. So what are we doing with this story?
It's a big trip story yesterday. I think it's two billionaires arguing right now. I'm not sure if people tune out or what. But
so attractive.
Yes.
Here's how enlightened the debate in American politics as represented in Illinois has become. We now have very respected journalists saying maybe they should do away with debates.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Which isn't good. Not good. Not good.
Come on. About the Sun-Times editorial board.
Yeah,
I mean, debate.
I haven't seen any ratings on these. Not that they're ratings killers to begin with.
Yeah.
But I've never heard less talk about a race that spending obviously so much money, record sets of money, but nobody's talking about this race.
They should watch the Sun-Times debate. I don't think they like each other. Just got the feeling.
Really? You're going out on a limb there?
Yeah.
But you know, in seriousness, this is a continuing trend of the decline of the gatekeepers, of the journalists, of the outside players to impact these races. And now, you know, look, I'm part of the cabal, I guess, because I make the TV ads that depend on the money. But when you spend this kind of money, when you have this decline in political journalism, then people pay less attention to the debates. They don't read the articles. They don't follow the investigative pieces. Yeah, and right. So then it's all about the TV ads.
Well, the TV ad that everybody should watch, I think, is the Scheme to Defraud ad that the Rauner campaign put out this week, only because I'm in it.
You are in it. And I was slightly falling asleep on my couch when I went, what the hell is that, Pat?
Who's that hillbilly?
Are you before or after the toilets? I was trying to. How did that work?
I'm standing right next to the toilets.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Were you? Did you do it in one take, or did it take you?
Oh no, that was a live shot.
It was a live shot.
But
yeah.
I did. I did footage. Take the toilet. These are Pritzker toilets. These are top end.
Yeah,
very soft.
Yeah. Does he have his name etched in him?
Oh yeah, geez.
Yeah.
It's okay. In my house now. JB.
7:15. Much more to. Oh, hold on. The phone's ringing.
Here it is.
Oh, this is the fake phone sound effect that we use.
No, this is a good one. It's a new.
Yeah, this is like very 2018.
Fake. Well, we changed our fake phone sound effect ringtone.
It's yeah. Nice. It's 2015. It wouldn't go.
Let me go ahead and get this and say. Yes. Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Cochran. You updated your iPhone, huh?
Yes.
It's an honor to have me on your very average show again.
Listen, Mr. President, let's start off on the right foot here. Devastating hurricane. Hurricane Michael makes landfall in Florida. Cat 4 storm, almost a Cat 5. We're sure everyone is safe and sheltered, I hope.
Yes, I will tell you, this hurricane was tremendous. It was a monster. Mm-hmm. It totally overtook the entire news cycle. And it seemed like it had an endless supply of hot air,
mm-hmm.
Frankly.
That's what you did there.
This hurricane was a lot like me. It's like me.
Yes,
but seriously,
yes.
We hope everybody stays safe. You know, I'll probably take a trip down there in the near future, put on my hooded windbreaker jacket, my white 45 cap, shake some hands, try to look, I'm not sure how you say this word, is it compassionate?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
compassionate.
Yeah, that's the word, yeah. Listen, it might be hard to believe, but Brett Kavanaugh is almost done with his first week in the Supreme Court. You had your little ceremonial swearing-in at the White House the other day. You must be so proud.
Yes, very happy. So proud of him. Brett's now a Supreme Court justice for life, or until his liver gives out, whichever comes first. Yeah, You know, he went through the ringer, those Senate Democrats treating him so badly. Mm. I mean, what a disgrace. Mm. Dianne Feinstein should be ashamed of herself. By the way, I heard she already has her Halloween costume picked out.
What is it?
Yeah, she's going as a sexy Mitch McConnell. Good luck trying to pull that off. She looks more like an Al Franken than a pageboy wig.
It is so mean. Just mean. Listen, have you had a chance to speak with Kavanaugh?
I did. I had no idea what the hell he was saying because he was completely hammered. Oh. But we did talk. He was still celebrating, and rightfully so. Right. Yeah, he was right in the middle of guzzling that new 77-pack of Natty Light they just came out with. Mm-hmm. He deserves it. He really does.
So your wife, Melania, had an interesting interview the other day, and she got questioned about how you use Twitter. And she said, I don't always agree with what he tweets. I give him my honest advice. And she was asked if she ever, you know, asked you to put down the phone. She said yes. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, Melania is such a sweet, almost over-the-hill woman. She really is. And I always pretend to listen when she criticizes me because that's what loving husbands do for their wives. They pretend to listen. Am I right, Cochran?
Well,
I don't want to brag, but I will tell you, I'm one of the greatest pretending-to-listen husbands that's ever pretended.
Right.
Nobody pretends to listen like me, believe me.
Now listen, Mr. President, switching topics again. Taylor Swift comes out in support for the Democrat candidates for Senator in Tennessee and other places. You not like her? I don't understand this. You not like her music 25% less?
Yes, 25% less. And if she would stop squinting and open her eyes more, I'd probably like her 15% more. That would bring it back to just 10% less. Very simple math. And in all fairness, liking Taylor Swift 25% less isn't that bad if you compare it to Melania, who likes me 62% less.
Sure.
So liking Taylor 25% less, that's practically a compliment.
Now, we heard Kanye West is coming over for lunch today. Is that right?
Very excited. Kanye's coming. He's going to teach me how to freestyle. I'm going to love it. Yeah, it's going to be Yeezy and Preezy, just two bros hanging out. Come to think of it, I might make Kanye my new ambassador to the United Nations.
Oh, boy.
You know, he's great at interrupting and talking over people. He'd fit right in over there.
Well, speaking of the UN, Nikki Haley just announced she's leaving. What say you?
Well, first off, let me say that Nikki Haley is a tremendous person. Until she speaks out against me and or runs for president someday, then she's a terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
But in all fairness, Nikki did a great job at the UN. She's smart, articulate, solid seven. Now look, a seven is nothing to sneeze at when you're talking about the UN. They have some very ugly people there. Horrible body odor, believe me.
It's just tiring. Now listen, Ivanka, you said she'd be dynamite to replace Nikki Haley.
Ivanka would be dynamite, and she'd have the best legs of the entire General Assembly, hands down. Not only that, Ivanka sold millions of handbags. Millions. Name one other ambassador who's done that. You can't do it, Cochran. And Ivanka has a tremendous foreign policy.
She has a foreign policy?
Yes, it's whatever my dad says is great. Very wise policy.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it, Mike?
I wanted to take your order for lunch with Kanye. Did you want Big Macs, quarter pounder with cheese, or a filet of fish?
Yes.
As you wish, Mel Leach.
Well, it's nice of the vice president to drop by.
Listen, isn't he something?
Thanks for taking time, Mr. Trump.
Hey, just another way to kill some executive time, Cochran.
All right, all the best. Yeah, you know I mean it. It's just very tiring. Very tiring. I mean, I'm glad he called, and I'm glad we updated our fake sound effect for the phone, too.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, you know my sermon here. Pat Brady is here, and Eric Edelstein is here. My sermon here: turnout. Your company, Eric, has many races around the country that you're dealing with. What are you hearing about turnout and projected turnout for the midterm?
Well, the energy still seems to be there. Early vote numbers are starting to come in. Different states obviously vote at different times, as people know. Some vote by mail, some have vote in person, and it seems like, in the big states, in the big races, you are seeing more energy on the Democratic side. I will say, you know, a lot of times in October, you begin to see Republicans consolidate and they begin to come home. We've seen some of that, whether it's a result of the Kavanaugh stuff or not. I think that's a little bit overstated. I think it's sort of a natural phenomenon. But I think you're going to see, you know, these aren't going to be presidential level turnout numbers, but you're going to see very healthy midterm numbers.
Steve, the Politico, Shia Kaplis's newsletter she does every morning, says requests for mail-in ballots in Illinois have surpassed 2014 numbers and are expected, at least in Chicago, mail-in requests are expected to overtake the all-time record set in 1944.
Well, there you go.
So you, that's because a positive. Of you. That's because of
you. Yeah, it's totally all me.
Well, let's take on that number, though.
They always increase because more people are more comfortable not going to
them. True.
So every year that kind of jumps
up.
But
this is higher than it was in 2016.
Yeah, but
which is surprising because that was a presidential
year. Yeah. You'll hear that every year.
It's a little bit of apples to oranges. I mean, I think there is more energy, but because Illinois is late to becoming an early vote state, those numbers increase for like the first 10, 15 years until people become comfortable. I mean, that doesn't take away from it. You're not going to see turnout that exceeds presidential levels. You will see, hopefully, a record.
But we're not going to have 30%, which is the normal midterm number.
I don't believe you will.
And who's it going to help?
The good guys. Good guys.
Who are the good guys? Because I'm confused who they would be now.
Sorry.
Hey, this is the thing. All these polls and things and the races, and Eric, you're involved in a lot of these, I know, have been wrong.
Yes.
It's been a very weird year. So, I know it sounds cliche, but it depends on who turns out. But I'm not sure who's...
We don't... I mean, this is the scary and the fun part of politics, like a sporting event. This is why, you know, I always say this, a funny thing happens.
This is why you put on your suit.
Well, a funny thing happens when the voters get involved. You know, all the experts, all the polling, all the prognostications, and then, you know, voters have their say. And that's the cool thing about democracy. And I do think, as we've seen in a lot of these recent elections, you don't know what's going to happen until people's voices are heard. We just hope there's a lot of people's voices are heard.
We did see a dramatic shift in downstate polls. On the Republican side.
Positively or negatively?
Positively.
For Republicans. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to ask you both about the fact that Fox is no longer running the Trump rallies at night. Is this a microcosm of a decline in popularity of the Trumpster?
I wasn't aware of that. That's a...
It's a new development.
Wow.
Breaking news!
What are they running instead?
They dip in and out. They run the regular programming.
Highlights.
Yeah, they have to find them. Yeah.
Just the cheer parts?
Yeah, right. Just the cheer parts and the red hats.
Like the red zone when they do just touchdowns?
Right, you know? Right. The Trump zone. They just run the Trump zone. Valuable Person on the Planet is produced by Pete Zimmerman. And Pete had a terrible accident happen to him yesterday when we were at Northwestern. We're going to talk about that coming up, Dave. Pete's lucky to be alive.
I would say so, yes.
In the meantime, we want to thank Coach Fitz and Jim and everybody at Northwestern who hosted us yesterday. And the video is up now. Or it's being edited now?
It's being edited.
Okay. Do we know when it's going up?
You can go to WGN Radio's Instagram page, though, and you can see the version where Pete
gets highlight,
it.
Yeah.
It's going to need a lot of editing. Can I just say that?
Today's MVPP is Alexander Panko. Good morning, Alexander.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Can I call you Alex?
Yeah.
All right, Alex. Tell me what happened to you in 2005.
2005, I was between my freshman and sophomore years at Northwestern, and I learned that I had a brain tumor. Was treated at Children's Memorial, which was then in Lincoln Park. Everything worked out okay then, but I got very involved with Lurie Children's, continue to be, and that's kind of the start of my story and my fundraising.
You know, people, when they have these near-death experiences, can take different paths post-experience. Yours is very interesting. All you're trying to do is climb the greatest seven summits in the world.
So I'm doing something called the Explorers Grand Slam. It's something 63 people in the world, 15 Americans, have done. It's climbing the seven summits, the highest mountain on each continent, and ski traversing to both the North and South Pole. And doing it all for Lurie's for a good cause.
So, ski traversing, is that cross-country skiing?
It's cross-country skiing. Kind of, you carry all your gear on a sled that's attached to a harness. It's actually so you don't fall into crevasses or fall through ice, and so you displace your weight.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Were you a climber before your brain tumor?
No, not at all. It's something that I kind of took it upon myself. I really wanted to climb Kilimanjaro. I was looking for a different sort of challenge in life, a physical and mental one. And I fell in love with it. And I decided to go ahead and take on this challenge. And doing research, other people who have done it, they've used it as a platform to raise awareness for something they're passionate about. So, post-college, I've been very involved with Lurie's, and I was lucky. I had a benign brain tumor. It was a happy ending, but I've gotten to see the other side of the story, and I'm very passionate about Lurie's, and so it was a no-brainer for me to raise both awareness for pediatric brain tumors, but also money for research.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law works there. It's a fabulous hospital, one of the greats in the world.
A lot of our listeners are already know Alex, and you know, obviously your story is well documented. But you've climbed four of the seven summits already, and when he gets to the top, and people have seen this story, he flies the W. is the Chicagoan who shows his Cubs pride at the top of these amazing summits. So what made you come up with that idea to show your Cubs pride at the top of at the end of your challenges?
Well, I'm a huge Cubs fan, and I actually pushed back my first trip, Kilimanjaro. I had to make sure I was here for the World Series. So I flew the first one right after the World Series, and I just flew one the other day on the summit of Cho-Oyu. It's the sixth highest mountain in Tibet. It's kind of my final training run for Everest. And unfortunately, I did it 2 days before we got eliminated from the postseason, so I caught a lot of flack from Brewers fans on my Instagram for that one.
Brewers fans sitting around having cheese curds and drinking beer while you're on the sixth highest mountain in Tibet.
I got a lot of the hashtag was fly the L from them. So
that's funny. Well, that's funny. I give them credit for that. How can we help?
Well, first off, any of your listeners, I'm trying to raise $1 million. We're at $400,000. This is really a Chicago thing. That's one reason I bring the Cubs flag to the summit. I bring the Northwestern flag. Lurie's is a source of pride for the Chicago community. Everyone, I feel, either directly or indirectly knows someone who's treated there. So no donation is too small. I'd rather have, 2,000-3,000 small donations than just a couple people giving big amounts. So you can follow my Instagram at Peaks of Mind Official.
Good.
And you can also donate at peaksofmind.com. All donations go straight to Lurie's. All these climbs are paid for out of my own pocket.
Wow. Very generous of you and the great nursing staff there, including my daughter-in-law, Lauren, thanks you for this as well. Last question before we go. Post-brain surgery, is oxygen deprivation a good idea?
I don't know. My family sometimes jokes maybe the surgery wasn't as successful as we think.
Well, you're an amazing
guy. They're proud of what I'm doing. They're not. They kind of wish I'd picked a different hobby, one a little bit less dangerous, but they're proud.
Well, you're an amazing guy, and thank you for the work you're doing and the passionate support of Lurie Children's.
Thank you for having me.
All right, you're the most valuable person on the planet. Good luck on the next summit. Avoid the Brewers fans, and give him a pizza. We like to send him a Lou Malnati's when he's on the top of Everest. They deliver there. I don't know if you know that. That's how versatile they are.
There you go. The Steve Cochran Show.
Steve Cochran Show. 7:42. Pat Brady, Eric Adelstein are here. All right, so Fox has announced. Well, they haven't announced, actually. Fox is just not doing it. Fox is no longer carrying wall-to-wall coverage of the Trump rallies because they're not delivering ratings-wise. What do we make of this?
Trump should just get a Netflix special.
But that made him in the primary.
Oh, how about that?
I think he won the Republican primary because he was on CNN every night. All night.
Yeah. That's well, and then got. MSNBC picked him up nonstop. That's the biggest ridiculous part of Joe and Mika is they were sucking up to him like nobody's business. And then they went the other way.
All of cable news was. I mean, the mainstream media was complicit in his rise.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's just no question about it. And, this Kathleen Hall Jamieson, who's from the Annenberg Institute, she's got this new book on the Russians and the bots and how they influence the election. And one of her big indictments is how the media just immediately took what the Russians did without any scrutiny and just reported it. All this leaked stuff, all this fake news. So, this notion of him hating the press and them being the enemies of the people, he ought to... he's in office partly because he rode in on their shoulders.
Oh, he was made by the media.
Yeah.
He's an absolute media-made concoction. I mean, before he got The Apprentice, outside of New York, he was like, oh, yeah, that guy. I mean, that's who he is.
I'd listened to him for years.
To Trump?
Yeah.
Like on Howard Stern?
Yeah, it was entertaining.
He's a very entertaining. Yeah. He knows how to be entertaining in the media. And he does it. That's why those rallies are comedy routines. And I could totally understand how people relate to him in those situations because he'll say things you're not supposed to say. He makes news, but because of his un-PC approach to things, that is just throwing red meat to people who want something different in politics.
I'd tell you what, though, being on the convention floor in 14 was odd and compared to prior years. It was a little bit scary.
Was the energy scary?
It was a different energy. It was locker up energy. Kind of, it was a little bit scary.
And that chant was going on again last night. But my point to all of this is, if Fox, the home game, is no longer running him in its entirety, outside of the people showing up at the rallies, isn't that going to have some reflection in a month?
We'll see. Chuck Todd mentioned this morning, elections are going to have consequences. We'll see what happens in November. If we lose the House badly, I'm sure there's going to be some blowback, and it'll probably get more scrutiny.
But let's talk about this. You know, I know you mentioned it with Chuck Todd, this Khashoggi story and this Washington Post journalist who supposedly disappeared. Because Trump creates this spectacle, Justin, you talked about it, you know, he's able to control the news cycle. There was a briefing the State Department gave where an AP reporter said, can you give me the name of the Turkish ambassador, United States ambassador to Turkey? Can you give me the name of the United States ambassador to Saudi Arabia? And the deputy spokesperson couldn't answer. And you know why they couldn't answer? Because we don't have one.
Right.
We don't have ambassadors to either of those two countries. Right. Now, in a normal administration, that would be a story today, saying this is sort of the breakdown of the world order.
Right.
And is the United States complicit in it? But instead, you know, we're talking about all this stuff that he throws up and the press covers.
But the question is it by design? Meaning there is a policy, America First policy. Is it by design that there are no ambassadors there? That's a signal that the United States government is not interested in dwelling in others' affairs.
I think that was the previous Secretary of State's doing, that he didn't fill a lot of those spots. I think that might have been his view. But I don't know if it's by design or not, but it is what it is.
I mean, it shows priorities, whether it's intentional or by default, but it clearly isn't important to this administration.
Well, that's why I brought up the kid story again. Because we literally, in the safest, greatest country in the world, a country that cares about children, have hundreds of kids who may never be reunited with their parents. Because we separated them at the border and we sent a lot of their parents back home. Regardless of whether they're good people or bad people, we're not talking about pedophiles and child sex trafficking. We're talking about people who came here with their kids, legally or illegally, who had their kids taken away, stolen by this country. And because of our lack of attention, nobody's talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, he is a master at controlling the news cycle. That's what he's good at. And he's able to eclipse these other stories, push away things that are less important. And because he is the master of saying the outrageous, it gets covered. And he knows how to do it better than maybe anyone we've seen in the modern age.
And the thing I think, too, the Democrats do is they take the bait with him. And when he does that, it might be, I've been saying this for 2 years, let it go. And it seems like you said a couple years ago, if everything's an outrage, nothing's outrageous.
Yeah.
And that seems to be with him. I think less response might be a more effective way to handle it.
There's a fascinating New Yorker piece on Sarah Huckabee Sanders. It's a great profile piece. And if you want any insight into some method to this madness, you should read it. Because her getting up there and being contentious with the press is clearly by design. It's clearly what Trump instructs her to do. And all these reporters who cover the White House say she couldn't be nicer behind the scenes. She couldn't be more helpful in running down their leads and doing their stories. But there's this spectacle. It's sort of primetime viewing for him. He sits in this room when she does her White House press briefings, and he basically then calls her afterwards and critiques her. She can't veer too far from what he wants, but he knows that if the press is his foil, then he's the anti-elitist guy who's appealing to, you know, mainstream America in his mind.
That's interesting.
It gets him. He's at what, 45-46% now?
Yeah.
So it does get him there. It's not conventional, but that's what a lot of people voted for. I was downstate a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to people down there that are big. These are big Trump people, and they just like the not doing it the way it's always been done, just for that reason, not because of the.
But there's a whole fraudulent thing going on in this country. This notion that the economy is pumping and everybody's killing it. They're not.
No.
It's just not.
Wait. The lowest unemployment.
No. Don't give me national stats.
But those are important statistics. That there is.
I'm quite aware of the statistics. The point is, the truth of the matter is, the economy on paper, the Dow, corporations, me, we're all doing really, really well. The average guy on the street, you ask 10 average folks today when you go to work or wherever you go in life, how much better are you doing now since you were in January of 2016?
I don't know. I'd like to see people answer that question, because I do believe a lot of people have more equity in their homes. They have more savings. They have more spending money. There's actually been wage growth. So you can't. The troubling thing for me as a Republican is we have all this good economic news. We should be sailing right through these midterms, and we're not because of the other nonsense.
Well, there's a lot of people who aren't feeling it. You know, we're doing this governor's race in Iowa, and I'll give you one statistic. You have the governor running around saying we have really low unemployment, but an independent study just said there's huge underemployment. So you have 40% of the people who work in Iowa say they can't pay, they can't cover their basic nut. So it is kind of a tale of two cities going on. But the bigger problem, Stephen, is something you said right when Trump got elected, which is the problem is the abnormal becomes normal. We become desensitized to this is the way it should be. And I think then the outrages become less outrageous, and we just expect it all to be this crazy. And
well, it might be the Fox pulling these things. It might be people are just tuning out.
Maybe. They're just too
used. Yeah, business decision. So, but does that, again, does that say something about his popularity filter? Because we're a month away. This whole idea that anger over how Brett Kavanaugh is treated, oh, poor Brett, that's somehow going to be a story on Election Day. I don't know that you can hold it that long when the attention span of this country is about 12 hours.
You're probably right, but there was a very near-term change in the polls I saw.
There was a bump last week, but I think you're right. I mean, like you said with Chuck Todd, nobody's talking about the New York Times piece about how Trump basically defrauded taxpayers to create his wealth. So, yeah, I think the notion that Brett Kavanaugh 26 days from now is going to be an issue, you know,
it's
maybe
easy,
to
it's easier to stay angry than it is happy.
Yeah.
Because I've been angry my whole life.
I don't know that you're the average American.
Okay. Is Pat okay today?
I don't know. It seems a little rough to me.
Seems a little out of sorts.
You know, last week I really got scolded by Mr. Cochran.
It left a scar.
It did. I missed my turn. Called one of my kids. I'm like, what should I do? They said, just show up and just don't talk to him anymore.
Yeah. So now he looks away, won't look me directly in the eye, and he keeps mentioning his therapist.
And I will not let him pay for my golf anymore.
Wow. Well, we'll see.
That is done.
We'll see.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here talking politics as we do on Thursdays. And again, if you're not listening to the show, please tell me why, because nobody else is doing stuff like this. This is good stuff. We're trying to help you guys.
Thank you.
It's also my therapy.
A lot of responses to the question about whether or not you're better off in January 2016. Overwhelmingly, and again, this is anecdotal from the text, overwhelmingly people are not. They're talking about double jobs. They're talking about not seeing wage increases. There are some that say, hey, things are working out for me. But I think that's such an interesting point, that there are a lot of people that would be doing good because of the economic situation in this country. But wage increases have fallen behind where they should be for this kind of growth. And you're seeing it kind of playing out where there's one narrative that's happening from Washington and there's another that's happening in this country.
Well, and look, the notion of these trade wars and this sort of taking on China and tearing up these trade agreements, you know, people do this rah-rah, yeah, America first, and it's terrible economics for the people that need it the most. And so there is this disconnect between the reality and the perception, and that's, you know, that we'll see if that catches up to them. I mean, obviously, the stock market has been good. Yesterday was a horrible day. We'll see if this is a trend or a blip. But maybe it's going to take until the 1% is affected by these idiotic trade policies, idiotic economic plans, for there really to be an impact.
Let's talk about the governor's race before we run out of time. Marianne Ahern reported yesterday, NBC 5 and the team over there, I think we're on this story first, that JB has paid back his $330,000 in toilet money.
Yeah, that's when you have two systems of justice. That's one for the wealthy and the connected like JB, and then there's the one that I have to live in, you have to live in. If I did what he did, I'd be going to the penitentiary.
Well, as a former prosecutor, is there a law that applies? I mean, I'm not being flip here. Is there a law that applies to this?
Yeah, and if you look at the Democrat that wrote the Inspector General's report, the Inspector General that was appointed by Tony Preckwinkle, he cites in that memo that he engaged in a quote-unquote scheme to defraud and cites the federal statutes, mail fraud, perjury, conspiracy.
So who should be picking that ball up and running with it?
Well, the U.S. attorney, but Kim Fox over at the state's attorney's office shoveled it over to, she recused herself because she had made a donation, I believe, and she sent it to the Special Prosecutions Bureau. And back in the day, I worked in that bureau. They're very good. But to me, this is more fits more of a federal crime.
And the Special Prosecutions Bureau, I assume, would have a timing issue where they wouldn't take it up anytime soon or not?
Well, according to the news accounts, they have it. Now, I'm not sure what they're doing with it.
But can't Pritzker, and you know more about this than I do, Pat, but he argues that it's a gut rehab. And so couldn't you at the end of the day say it's a gut rehab and it's hard to prosecute something? And he paid back the money. It's a political thing, and he wants out of the scandal, of course. But he's saying it's a gut rehab. So how do you prove that?
It's not me. This is the Democratic Inspector General that said that he engaged in a scheme to defraud. And the basis of that is that he submitted fraudulent affidavits after he ripped the toilets out. And there's a very damaging email from his wife saying, rip the toilets out, we'll get it reappraised, and we'll put one back in for JB. Now, they didn't do that, but they went backwards, so he got $145,000 check back from Cook County. But in this paying it back to me, first of all, it admits you did something wrong, which he's been denying for 18 months. Secondly, why does JB get to do that when there have been aldermen and other people have been indicted for stealing a lot less than he stole?
Any chance Joe Barrios takes a fall for this?
No, in fact, they exonerated him in the report.
Well, that's interesting, because exoneration and Joe Barrios, those two things don't normally appear in sentences.
It wasn't the Pritzkers, the ones that are involved, misled people.
I mean, your instinct seems to be different. I don't have a sense that this story is over. I mean, I think there's something.
No, I don't think it's over, but it depends. And maybe it's part of the conversation we had before about you get so much noise. Why is this not a bigger story? Yeah. But listen, this is how Rod Blagojevich started. There was an investigation, and then he gets indicted into his second term. And as I said last week, at least Rod did us the service of getting elected before he started committing crimes.
Got a lot of people that listen in Iowa, Eric. I know your company works with one candidate there. What's the story on the governor's race?
Yeah, they had the first debate last night. Fred Hubbell's the Democrat, our candidate. Kim Reynolds is the incumbent governor who took over when Branstad became ambassador to China. They had a pretty robust debate. It's a classic debate where she's running around saying Iowa's the best state in the country and everything's going fine. And at the same time, they have a Medicaid system that's in complete meltdown. The schools are suffering. They've shut down mental health clinics. Opioid crisis is off the chart. So it's going to be interesting. It's a close race. We'll see. Des Moines Register poll had the Democrat up a couple points, but within the margin of error. So I think it's going to be one of those places that sort of says, what's the view of the world? Is it everything's wonderful under Trump and Reynolds, or do we need change?
And what's the name of your candidate?
Fred Hubbell.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing? We talked about this when you picked this race up. Anybody that touches healthcare dies.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about healthcare. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You get
and it's really the big, this is a topic for another day, yeah. But most of the advertising you're seeing across the country right now in congressional, Senate, and governor's races is about healthcare. So this is the debate that never ends.
Well, that's because it's when it really gets personal, even more so than money, right?
Yeah.
Thank you both. Pat, I'll see you in therapy. Coming up, Stories That Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should.
It's Moron Entertainment, remote style. Live from New York City, there's the other guy. The other
Actually,
moron.
I'm not there till tomorrow.
Well, why are you on the phone today?
I don't know. The phone rang, and they said, you ready to go? And I said, yes. And now I'm talking to you.
Are you at your desk? Are you at your desk?
Yeah.
All right, hold on, let me turn the microphone on.
Well, Dean? I'm sorry, Dean. The email said I'll be in New York on Thursday and Friday morning on my cell. I took that as Thursday and Friday on your cell.
Dean, are you at your desk?
I am at my desk.
Oh, wow!
I want to leave the phone up, too, so we can get that cool echo effect.
Hello, underneath.
All right, before we get to...
Well, then we should let Dean know that Alonzo Bowden is driving.
He can hang around with Alonzo Bowden. He's a big Alonzo Bowden fan.
I will be in New York tomorrow, though.
Should we call you then?
Well, I don't care.
I mean, do you have some time now?
Yeah, you got nothing but time now.
All right, Selena Gomez, Vern Troyer, Kanye, Trump, the Chicago Film Festival, the most streamed song and artist on Spotify. These are the stories.
These are the big stories, but also we are moments away from the return of Jennifer Lyons to WGN TV. This was our news director who left. She accepted a position with Catholic Extensions about 3 weeks ago. can hear. I think she may be arriving now.
That's a lot of sucking up going on early there.
And then she, you know, she just, you know, as busy as it's been in the news business the last few weeks, I mean, she really did some soul searching and decided to come back.
I can understand why it would be hard to leave right now, because there's just so much going on. But I'd like to think there's a backstory to this involving scandal that we have to uncover, and the story is actually broken by the WGN newsroom that she manages.
I don't think so. We're a squeaky clean.
You're a little distracted right now, aren't you? You're waiting for her to walk in.
And I've got my back turned to the whole thing because I don't want to be distracted by it all.
So do you think, Dean, that...
Because if you... People, they broke out bottles of booze, and there's a poker party going on in her office.
At 8 a.m. Nice.
They've done something to her office that reeks of debauchery. A bunch of the writers and engineers just went in there shirtless. I'm not...
You're not kidding.
I'm not 100% sure what's going on in there, but I don't want to see any of it.
Yeah, you should have your back turned. Jemmer?
So I know there was a big blowout on a Saturday night,
right?
You know, wishing Jen
a goodbye party?
Yes,
yeah, we had
a very big party.
Yep.
Do you think she kept a list of those that didn't show, and now that she's back?
This is payback.
I know Dave Ennett's got his arm up.
I was not there.
I know our own Andrea Darlis wasn't able to attend.
I wasn't able to go. It's not that I didn't want to go.
Yeah, tell payback. It to the judge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But isn't this sort of like the wedding? It only lasted 2 weeks. Do I keep the gifts?
Yeah.
Well, she did get quite a few.
There was multiple
going
cakes,
away presents.
A lot of cakes. Yeah.
We had a lot of cakes.
Did somebody take her like desk and stuff?
Well,
that's a good point. Did somebody go into her office?
No. It's been
she's got the same office.
It's been dark for the 3 weeks that she's been. They didn't even take her nameplate off.
Wow.
There's nameplates by outside of all the offices.
All right. Well, there's part of our scandal.
And
the people that were in charge of taking the nameplates down knew she was coming back. They're involved.
These offices are, you know, maybe like four people comfortably can be in one of these offices. There's about 35 people in her office right now. Many of them, as I said, shirtless.
I will say, I have never seen an outpouring for anyone in management, one of my least favorite categories, like Jen Lyons got. And I just know Jen from a distance. She's a lovely person, very nice, and does obviously a great job with the high-rated news programming on Channel 9. So you guys seem quite excited that she's back.
We are beyond excited. Not only one of the best journalists and manager of journalists, if that's what you want to call us, but truly one of the nicest people in the world.
Yeah.
And has six children.
That's the part.
In addition to managing all of her kids here at WGN.
That's what amazes me.
She has six wonder. She has a wonderful, wonderful family of six children. So she's
crazy.
An amazing person. We love her, but she may let a few expletives fly this morning when she sees what we've done to her office.
Everyone's fired. That's why I came back. Text message question of the day, Dean. What TV show stuck around too long? Here's a few. Facts of Life, Big Bang Theory, Castle. I agree with that. Mary Vanderbilt, you and I are big Castle fans.
I love Castle.
But the last season...
got a little weird.
I disagree with Big Bang. I love Big Bang Theory.
South Park. Lost was on way too long.
Yep.
The Brady Bunch. Two words. Cousin Oliver. Grey's Anatomy, because as we established earlier, everybody slept with everybody. The Bachelor and all of its incarnations. How I Met Your Mother. Two and a Half Men after two episodes was on too long. Cooking shows, okay. Chef competitions, way overdone.
Yeah, I can't stand
this. We all in agreement on all that?
Oh, yeah.
I would add WGN Morning News.
It's true. You guys have gone on too long.
It's way too long.
Most streamed artist in history. On Spotify.
Who would you think? Who might you put into that?
Beyonce.
Yeah, that's where I'd go. Beyonce.
Nope.
Taylor Swift.
Nope.
Kim Kardashian.
Nope.
She doesn't sing.
Zamfir and the Pan Flute.
Steve's got it. Zamfir.
Who is it?
It's Ed Sheeran.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Sheeran.
I guess so, sure.
Actually, he has the most streamed song of all time.
Which is?
His song, Shape of You.
Oh, that's Dave Ennett's song.
Dave's favorite
Dave,
song.
Dave, you want to sing that?
I already did that.
Okay, we'll
there's
play
a video
that.
At WGMRadio.com. You can see
Dave singing at his
Dave,
car.
Great.
I heard it on the Bill and Wendy show yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I did too.
Is Selena Gomez okay?
Selena Gomez has been hospitalized. She had been suffering from complications of her kidney transplant that she had last September and has had very low white blood cell counts. So they she went to the hospital for observation. She the doctor said that she had to stay there, and she kind of, according to TMZ, had a meltdown, pulling the IVs out of her arm, wanting to get out. So they have her in a restricted area right now.
Wow.
And they are using something called dialectical behavior therapy, according to TMZ, to help her manage emotional outbreaks and emotional disorders.
Well, that's not a good start. Hope she's going to be okay.
Right. Yep.
Vern Troyer, suicide. But apparently drank himself to death?
That's exactly what the coroners in L.A. Concluded after they did an autopsy on him. Vern Troyer, who was Mini-Me in the Austin Powers movies, last April passed away. Multiple organ failure, they say, as a result of alcohol poisoning. And his representatives say that he has, for a very long time, suffered with depression and suicidal thoughts. So they are saying that he basically literally drank himself to death.
Chicago Film Festival highlight.
That's a very upbeat report today.
That's why I'm trying to get into this.
Yeah. Film Festival kicked off last night, and it kicked off with the Steve Carell, Timothy Chalamet movie called mm-hmm. Beautiful Boy, mm-hmm. just to keep on our theory of really depressing things. It's okay. The story of a young man who is opioid addicted, and his father and his family's struggle to try to help him. It's a beautifully made movie, beautifully performed movie about what families go through with chemical addiction, of you know what you can do, what you can't do. It's amazingly performed. But that premiered the festival last night. But there are 150 films from 50 different countries. There's a film tonight called The Hate You Give.
Yep.
That's a story about the Black Lives Movement. Beautifully done. Chicago filmmakers George Tillman and Bob Teitel are the guys behind that. Viola Davis is going to be in town this weekend with her new film called Widows. That's going to be Saturday night. William Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist and French Connection, and I'm sure the thing that he's most proud of, being a director here at WGN-TV at one time, he is being honored by the film festival on Monday night.
He's got to be 1,000.
He is, he might be pushing 80, I think.
I would think.
Be in his upper 70s.
A little
or
kid
80s.
When he was did The Exorcist.
1973.
Yeah. 45 years ago.
Yeah.
And tomorrow you'll have highlights of Kanye and Trump. You want to hang around and talk to Alonzo Bowden, or you got better things to do with Jen Lyons?
I would love to hang around.
All right, stand by. More with Dean coming up in just a second.
I'm in love with your body. Why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, oh. I'm in love with your body.
Dave's going to be performing that at the Welcome Back Jen Lyons concert.
Don't think so.
My kids sing that, the Dave Bennett version, every time it comes on the radio.
Of course, that's fantastic.
They love it.
It's the kind of thing that could freak Alonzo Bowden out. And by the way, Dean is with us from Channel 9 on Jen Lyons Returns Day. Alonzo!
Good morning.
Hey, man, it's been a while. How are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Doing fine. Thanks for waking up.
Listen to that voice.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is the greatest intro that I've had, and I don't know how long. Just we got super sad movies, then we got weird music, and then, hey, Alonzo, yeah. How you doing?
It's like a Fellini movie.
That's what friends are for. Let's get the plug out of the way.
I appreciate
You're at the Improv all weekend, right?
Yes, I'm going to be at the Improv in Schaumburg, and it's going to be a great weekend. A lot of shows, a lot to talk about, you know, a few things going on in the news.
Yeah, a little bit. But now, a lot of people would say, and I don't agree with this, but a lot of people would say it's harder than ever to be funny. You agree or disagree?
No, I don't think it's harder than ever. I think people are getting really sensitive, you know, on topics and things like that. But, you know, the hardest thing right now is being funnier than things coming out of the White House. I'll tell you, as I'm writing, he'll say something, and I'm like, man, I got to start over. So, you know, then we got Kanye. This is, I don't even know. I don't even know where we're going to go with this. What do you suppose they're going to talk about at lunch?
He's going to become Attorney General today, is my guess.
Yes, congratulations. Kanye West, the new Attorney General.
I think it's the UN. I think it's actually the UN, right. So you can baffle the entire world.
Wow, yeah. That's a good...
Plus, Dean, imagine his fashion at the UN, because it's international wardrobes there. I mean, you know, Kanye could sell his clothing line.
You're right.
And I think with his whole thing of, you know, repealing the abolishment of slavery, not going to go over really big with the international community.
some of the countries.
Does when he talks about repealing the abolishment of slavery, does he know he's married to a white woman?
He may not.
That wasn't really approved of back then.
Yeah, he may not.
I don't know.
Dean, you know Alonzo.
I do. Yes, I love. You know what? I'm wondering, you're talking about the topical comedy that you're doing. Wanda Sykes recently had some people walk out of a show that she was doing when she was talking about Trump. I was hosting a Q&A with John Cleese here in Chicago, and he was talking about the president, and some people walked out. Have you ever had any reaction that you've had to deal with on stage?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. The funniest thing to me on the people walking out of Wanda's show, I mean, first of all, you go see Wanda Sykes, and you're surprised she made fun of Donald Trump.
Yeah, you're not paying attention.
I don't. You obviously haven't been around much. But the funny thing to me is they wanted their money back. Like, no. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. No. That same night, I was doing a show, and I had a joke about President Obama giving a speech, and this woman jumped up and started yelling. I mean, yelling. He was a preacher, not a president. He was a preacher, not a president. And my first thought was like, wow, you're still mad at him? Like, you haven't let go of that one yet? So, yeah, it happens that people are losing their minds at comedy shows. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help them.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that, because the other day, Dean, I don't know if you heard this, but there were some folks that got mad at me about bashing on Trump, and they brought up President Taft. I think that's going back too far.
That's not. There should be a 50-year rule.
That Taft was a problem. You know, that, oh man, I understand that Van Buren wasn't too great either.
Totally.
You know, so
don't get me started on Millard Fillmore.
Remember Van Buren used to wear that hat that said, Make America England Again?
Yes, that's
right. There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Alonzo Bowden all weekend at the Improv. Two shows tonight. No, wait, that's not right. One show tonight.
No, Friday night.
No,
what
day is today? Thursday.
See, he did that same thing to me when I came on the show today, Alonzo.
Yeah, okay. Two shows tomorrow night.
There's a bunch of people.
14 shows Saturday night.
Ready to walk out. They're going to be ready to walk out, and they're going to be like, wait a minute, there isn't even a show to walk out of? I was all prepared to leave. Now I got to come back tomorrow to just make an American.
No, listen. I just texted Wanda Sykes. Wanda's going to come in for tonight and cover you.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yes, we're good there. So go to the Chicago Improv website. Google it up at Chicago Improv. Alonzo's going to go over to Channel 9 and join in on the party. AlonzoBowden.com is the website, by the way. Good catching up with you, bud.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's two shows Friday, two Saturday, and one Sunday.
So you say. Chicago Improv. Google that. All right? And the party continues at Channel 9. Would you tell Jen we're happy, too?
Wait a minute. She's resigning again.
Thank you, buddy.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Candyman makes everything he bakes satisfying and delicious. You can even eat the dishes.
You can take tomorrow.
Dip it in a dream.
Well, as you know, if you listen to this show, Broadway in Chicago, in the Steve Cochran Show, we're pals. What can I tell you? We're pals. And there's a great show, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which, you know, this is why I like this show. Mm-hmm. It's visually stunning. So no matter how old a child may be, they can get caught up in it. They don't have to even know the music or the story. And yet it's a classic story that the rest of us can wrap our heads around. And because it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I can stay up till it's all done. I won't fall asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous show. I saw it. And I will say one of the things that really grabbed my attention was being able to take a story that everybody knows and find creative ways to stage the show.
Well, introduce this guy.
Noah Weisberg's here. He is the star. He plays Willy Wonka in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Noah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I have so many questions about it, and actually, you know, being able to do this show, a touring show, but there is something as actors have to learn to almost interact with new staging, and there's a lot of video technique that's used on the sides, and it's a different story than say 5-10 years ago, even in Broadway shows. That there's you have to almost CGI. It's almost a CGI experience at the Broadway level.
Yeah. Well. Also with this production, it was a big hit in London. It ran for like 5-6 years.
Right.
And then people loved it on Broadway, but Warner Brothers, who's our producers, and they said, you know, we could cut and paste and take what we did on Broadway and throw it on the road and people might like it. But instead, they did something that's so amazing. They reinvested in the whole thing. They upped the scenery. We re-choreographed things. They even wrote a new song. I mean, so we've got all the songs from the movie,
right, right,
that you know, Pure Imagination, Candyman, I've Got a Golden Ticket, but you've got a full score of new songs written by the guys who wrote Hairspray and other Broadway shows. So it's a full Broadway show. And again, our director and our producers, our director, Jack O'Brien, who's this like 3-time Tony Award winning legend, rethought the whole thing and said, I didn't get to see it on Broadway. And they said, oh, actually, we're really happy. We're proud of it.
Right.
But we want you to do any bit you want to do, anything, if you want to rewrite some moments or lines. So, and that goes with those screens that sort of bring it into 2018.
Maybe this is the template, right, for taking a classic and redoing it. Don't get lazy.
Yeah, I think
figure out new ways.
There has to be a reason to revive an
old... Don't just assume the audience is thrilled to see you again.
Right, and with me, often they're not. So, they're like, oh, this guy.
Noah Weisberg, one of the busiest actors in America. When was the last time you didn't work? I feel like you've been working forever.
Thankfully, I do work a lot, and like a lot of actors, you sort of piece it together. I go between L.A. and New York, so it'll be a TV show or a commercial or an animation thing, or I've been writing and directing things now, and then, of course, my real love, which is theater.
Well, yeah. What's this is fascinating to me. What's a typical day for a busy working actor?
Well, the best days are the ones where you are busy. The worst days are where you have nothing to do. Because
are you still auditioning for stuff, or are people just casting you?
No, I'm auditioning. I mean, there are some things that come.
Well,
in.
We got to get you a better agent. I don't like the fact that you're having to audition.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. There are things that come in, and when you're sort of more known in an area, maybe like theater, where they offer you certain things, but.
Have you gotten the thing where they needed a Noah Weisberg type and they didn't call?
My family, no matter who it is on television, that if I'm not in the show, they're like, you could have been that person. Like, that's an 80-year-old woman. They're like, you would have been marvelous in this role.
No, this role of Willy Wonka is one that Gene Wilder made famous and has been performed on Broadway in London and other places. Talk about getting into that feel, getting into Willy Wonka.
So I had a big choice to make, and that was, do I watch that original movie that I grew up loving? And I didn't rewatch it because I'm a huge fan of his, not just in this movie, but specifically in this movie. And I thought, I'm going to get caught trying to be him.
Absorbing some of it, yeah.
And it's already in my bones a little bit because a lot of us have grown up watching it. So I decided that I'm going to do what my favorite actors that I admire do, which is they play this character, but really as an actor, you're exposing yourself, of course, behind the safety of the character. So it's just me up there, you know, exposing like my childlike side and my insecurities and my joy and innocence and all that kind of stuff.
And beyond Gene Wilder playing, making that role iconic, that character, Willy Wonka, is so interesting because you think about it as this reclusive, iconic, almost one percenter, if you think about it, a guy on the hill who's disconnected to the rest of the world, and he's trying to find connection. There's a lot of things that are relatable to that character to what we know today.
This is like the perfect time for this show. Especially to get to travel it around our country. The sort of moral of the story is that the good guy wins, that innocence wins. You've got 5 kids who go through this factory tour.
Right.
And 4 of them are sort of brats and self-centered and in it for themselves.
And they represent different things that you know, sort of personify those things, those traits, those negative traits.
Exactly. And then you've got this one kid, Charlie, who's just loving the experience, comes from nothing, And that's why you're right that Willie comes off that way. But the way that I think of him is actually as this wounded child who has been hurt and sort of closed himself in and locked himself in his factory. And when he sees this innocence of this kid, Charlie,
recaptures the joy of life.
Now, yeah. Justin, you took Miles.
Yes.
Is this his first viewing of a Willy Wonka?
Well, he's seen the movie, and he did not care for the Johnny
Which
Depp
movie?
One,
oh, the Johnny Depp
but
one.
But he liked the, and he's been pushing us to watch the original again. Julie has been a little bit. She's like, we've seen it a million times.
Well, don't hold back for Noah. What did Miles say?
Miles wrote, Miles came with me to see it, and because it was
feel-good hit of the fall?
It was a feel-good. He gave it 4.5 out of 5. He wrote a review. I told him if he's going to come with, he has to do work because we're on the press and we're seeing this for work.
Show him the process.
He wrote his own review of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
He did an actual blog post.
He did a blog post.
We should have had him skip school today so he could have asked Noah questions.
But he enjoyed it, and I'll give the line. This is what he said. He said, first, let's talk about the characters. I said, Noah Weisberg, Willy Wonka, did an amazing job in all of his musical numbers and was a great Willy Wonka. I think that his opening musical number, The Candyman, was the perfect intro to the show. So that's what he gets.
Wow. That's an 11-year-old.
That's the only press you get in that.
That's an 11-year-old.
Yeah, no, that's not bad.
He does go on to say the things he doesn't like, and you did not make that list. So
thankfully.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So did you get Noah's notes? Is he sending Miles. Notes on, or I mean, Miles notes on on the
He gives extensive notes, and they're very helpful. Pick up your cues and act two.
Right.
Pacing, Noah, pacing,
yes.
He kept saying.
Yes. We got to take a break here. Can you hang around a minute?
Of course.
Okay, question when we come back. Think about this during the break.
Yeah.
As an actor, is it tougher to get into a fantasy character or something that can be identified with by regular life? Not my first day.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I don't like the look of it. Hoopa, hoopa, doopa-dee-da. If you're not greedy, you will go far.
It's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. BroadwayinChicago.com is as good a way as any to get all of your tickets, your group tickets, your family tickets, your bar mitzvah party tickets, your post-bar mitzvah tickets. So here's the actor E question. You know, if you're going to play a cowboy, we knew there were cowboys. If you're going to play a cop, we knew there were cops. There was never really a person like Charlie, or I should say like Willy Wonka. Is it hard to play a fantasy character as opposed to someone that you can have some frame of reference on?
It actually makes it easier because I guess there's expectations because a lot of people, you know, of course, remember the movie, but I can do anything. And every night is different. And one of the fun things is watching my fellow cast members try not to laugh on stage.
Oh, that's cool.
Because every night I say a lot of the lines completely differently. And I also think, like, if there's a time where maybe I mess up a lyric in a song, I could probably stop the orchestra and be like, that's it, let's go back. I'd like to do it again. And the audience would be like, yeah, of course, that's what he would do.
That's funny.
How is it working with children? Because this show has great actors who are, you know, playing Charlie and playing all the kids that come through. How is it as an actor playing off of them? Because I would assume that you throwing out different lines might be tough for a kid. Kid who's trying to figure out where they're supposed to be.
It's awful because they're so good and they get all the attention and they're adorable.
Little creeps.
Yeah. It's actually great. So we have three kids who play Charlie and they rotate. And it makes it fun because every night's different because they're, of course, a little different than each other or a lot different, but all great. And the other four actors who play the other kids who go through the tour are actually young adults, which really also highlights the innocence of our actual child actor plays Charlie.
How come there hasn't been a stage mom or a stage dad or a stage parents musical? Let's write that.
Yes. Because, that's actually a great idea.
Right?
Yeah.
We've seen it in everybody, and there are a lot of well-meaning moms and dads with kids who don't understand the damage they're doing, and great kids who really would love it the way you love it, if not forced out of it.
Yeah.
None of those kids are in this production.
No, actually, these three kids get along beautifully, and they could be competitive because there are certain opportunities, maybe you're on a talk show or a different thing. No competition, which to me means the parents are awesome.
Yeah. It's the only answer, right?
Right.
When did you realize you loved it? How old were you?
I was 9 years old. I grew up in Northbrook here, and I played baseball. And something about, my brother says I was good, but I think I was terrible. And one summer, my mom was like, do you want to go to the summer program at the local Northbrook Park District with this director, Gregory Denhart? And I said, yeah. And I never went back to playing sports.
How about that?
I don't know. I found
where you needed to be.
Yep.
You've starred on Broadway. You have a ton of television film credits. But growing up here in Northbrook, you have not performed in Chicago. This is the first time. What does it feel like to be on stage at the Oriental Theater on Randolph Street, being a kid from this area?
It's the greatest. I grew up mainly in Northbrook, but my weekends were in the city. So I went to so many shows at the Oriental and the other theaters in the area, not to mention the Lincolnshire Marriott and, you know, theaters in the suburbs. So to be on the stage looking out where, like, little me was sitting, it was a chorus line. I don't remember what year it was, probably some national tour that came through. That was one moment where I saw this, like, this actor breathing after a number. And I was like, I don't know why that moment. I was like, I want to learn how to breathe properly. I was like 11.
You were addicted.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely
yeah.
hooked.
Yeah.
And the request for comps from everybody who claimed they were your friends as kids, those should probably stop.
Everyone, they do it sort of subtly. Like, what's the best way to get tickets? I mean, is it through you or... I'm like, you can just, you know, go to charlieonbroadway.com.
Yeah, yeah, charlieonbroadway.com, Broadway.
Have you said no to anyone, like, that you didn't like? We weren't friends. I would love that confrontation if somebody asked me for something that didn't like me.
I just tried to get four, and he said, call the box office. Yeah,
I did. I said it in a nice tone.
Yeah, you did.
It is BroadwayInChicago.com. And what's the Charlie website specifically?
I think it's CharlieOnBroadway.com.
Charlie on Broadway.
Well. Yeah.
And limited run only through October 21st. Great thing for you and your kids to do, but it's a great thing for couples to do.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not just for kids. Like all those great movies, Disney movies, different things that we love, it plays on a total level for adults as well.
Yeah. Right. And just to make sure it does, occasionally you'll sneak in cursing.
Oh, I swear throughout the whole thing. Mainly backstage when things don't go right.
Right, exactly.
Just to show that I'm the lead.
No one for a guest. You were great. It was a great Willy Wonka.
Thank you.
And a great show.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Good luck with the
Thanks
rest of the run.
Me.
Good luck with all of it. Come back and see us.
I would love to. Thank you.
NoahWeisberg.com and Instagram at Instagram Noah. Coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, Steve Grzanich next. It is 9:12. The story of Pete Zimmerman and the accident that could have taken his life yesterday. Still to come tomorrow, we are at Brookfield's Mary's Morning Mix-Up Restaurant. A little morning breakfast club action tomorrow from 6 to 10. Details at WGNradio.com/events. Well, you recognize the music. Price is Right Live coming to the Chicago Theater Sunday, yeah. February 17th. Live interactive stage show giving you the chance to come on down and play classic games from the show. What's the best game ever on The Price is Right? It's a little one where the guy climbs the mountain.
Oh, yeah, the Alpine Climber, yeah, dude.
That's a pretty good one.
So they make a touring show out of The Price is Right? Is that the idea? It's not, yeah. It's not a live television taping.
No, everything's a touring show now.
Nick DiGilio loves that Yodeler game.
Is that what it is, the Yodeler?
Yeah, the Yodeler.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's a ticket.
The live interactive stage show gives you a chance to play. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. There'll be two shows on the 17th of February, one at 3, the other at 7. Pardon me, one at 3, the other at 7. Get tickets at Chicago at thechicagotheater.com.
Or win them today.
Or win them right now.
Right now.
We should have somebody guess a value of one of the things Greg brought in.
There you go.
There you go. Greg Flam is here. The
How
swap.
You doing?
We're doing fine. How are you?
Good. Great. Thanks for having me.
Where do people get to meet you and swap stuff and buy stuff?
Every weekend, Saturday, Sunday at Wolf's Flea Market in Palatine on Rand Road.
Okay.
Or wolfs.com.
What'd you bring in today?
All kinds of stuff. I get asked all the time, like, I want to sell online. Where do I start? Should I go to, you know, Goodwill? Should I go wherever? And I said, you know, start in your home. This way, the learning curve, it, you know, is easier. If you fail, it's not a big deal. You don't have anything invested. So I try to bring in stuff that's in people's houses that they are readily available. So bicentennial license plates and got a matching pair. And what you're looking for are plates that have more letters than numbers because people cut them up and upcycle and craft with them. So they like more letters than that. And I have a 1967...
I like these because I was born in 1976, so I feel like these are for me.
Yeah, and those are more collectible.
Thank you very much for my birthday.
Yeah, the matching pair, those probably go for about, should I say, or they're going
to
guess.
No, I think we should do it where instead of guessing how much the value is, the best brag, the person with the best brag, and you choose, Steve, they get the tickets to Price is Right.
Best brag on an item they have?
Yeah, they have to call in with an item. This is the swap meet. They call in 312-9.
All right, I'm fine with that. fine with that.
So if you got the best item, you're like, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard, you're going to win the tickets today. There you go. Now, look at the lines light up.
All right, so how much is that plate worth?
The set of plates go for about $30 to $40, so that's something that's in your house.
But you saved it for 40 years.
Yeah, I didn't. I picked it up at a garage for a lot less. But I have this cool 1967.
That would be 42 years to be technical.
Technically, yeah. I'm trying to help you out a little.
Yeah, a 1967 Abercrombie Fitch catalog. Wow. And it's right in the wheelhouse of mid-century modern, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, the men are wearing
1967, and I could
Wait, Abercrombie and Fitch was around in 1967?
They were before that. I saw a 1910 catalog.
Really?
Yeah.
When did they become the really annoying place in the mall that snooty teenagers worked at?
Clearly after this magazine, because there's no, like, half-naked
There's people. No shirtless.
Everyone's clothed in this
one. Oh, yeah. Boring.
But it's definitely mid-century modern. A lot of ideas in there. A lot of clothing from that era.
Cool. Very cool.
I also have a 2003 Chicago Bears yearbook. These go for about
$15. 2003?
Yeah. And Justin does.
It's like, who's in the 2003 team? Starting line your locker. Urlacher, and then the quarterback would have been.
There's 51 other guys.
Jeez, Cade McNown at that point, like he would have been the. Dave Ennett, what do you think on a 2003 Bears? Because they won in 2001 with Jim Miller as a quarterback, and that was.
But it got bad real fast.
It was a year before Lovie Smith, so it's Dick Geron's last year. Oof.
Yeah,
Anthony Thomas.
Yeah, there's an A-Train. Yeah.
Mike Brown's on that team.
War Coldman.
War Coldman may still be there.
There's a lot of guys in here who I don't remember.
Let's just say it's glossy. It's very glossy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of fill in there.
And how much is it worth?
About $16 for that.
And there's half-naked people who aren't in the Abercrombie and Fitch catalog.
Oh, there you go. Or in the Bears catalog.
Yeah.
All right, what else?
A digital derby auto raceway handheld game. And these are very primitive handheld electronic games nowadays. I mean, kids would just laugh at them. So.
Now, I've seen, and I got one of these for my
$40
birthday,
on that.
An old baseball one that was sort of the
Mattel.
The, yeah, Mattel, yeah. And they reissued these in Target.
Yeah, you have to look at the back on the dates. The 77, 78 are the ones that go for about $25,
Steve, $30. I got it, and it was like a kitsch thing. Miles got it for my birthday. I'm and it's the beep, 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 one of those.
Mm-hmm.
It took 5 seconds for me to be like, this is the worst game ever.
Right.
Like, I was like, maybe it was good in 1983, but it's not good now.
Yeah, and I played the football version and the basketball version. I played that to death back in the...
And if you try to play it now, it doesn't work.
It's 2 minutes, you're bored, you know.
So, Steve, should maybe take a break, and then we'll go to the calls and see.
Right, but are you out of stuff?
I have a couple other magazines, but this one was a WGN one. That's why I brought that.
What's that one?
If you want to take that, Mary.
The Civil Defense. Chicagoland Civil Defense Manual. The Hobby House.
I forget the year on that.
And what, we're the sponsors of it? So people know how to
do WGN, WGNB, and WGN-TV.
So that means we sponsored it to tell you when to get into your bomb shelter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, compiled in cooperation with national and local civil defense authorities and sponsored in public service by WGN Incorporated.
Wow.
Yeah, that's on loan from Don Wolf over at Wolf's Flea Market.
Wow.
He thought you might like that.
And I believe that is worth... $1 million.
Right.
Is that accurate?
Divided by, I don't know. No, probably $25, $30 for that, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, let's do this. Let's do that break Justin mentioned, and let's come back. And again, the best item. The best item.
The best five.
Or best brag.
We're giving away five pair of tickets?
Five pair of tickets.
Five pairs.
Oh, wow.
Wow. All right, well, Elizabeth. Wow. Elizabeth, Sean, Drew, Carey, and Glenn. I like your chances.
Drew Carey.
There you go, Drew Carey. 312-981-7200 is the number.
Yesterday, Steve, you had Coach Q on, you know, and I was out and I was sick, but I was listening, and you come back from the Q interview with the Hooters commercial, and in that commercial, he references an MVB. The most valuable burger, and your Tribune read just made me think of.
How about that?
There you go.
I was curious about
it's Q's all
favorite
one
burger.
Full circle. Tickets for The Price is Right live at the Chicago Theater Sunday, February 17th. Tickets at ChicagoTheater.com. That's the Chicago Theater, spelled the fancy way, Greg. TRE.com or Ticketmaster.com. Greg Flam is here. Greg, you appear where and when?
Every Saturday and Sunday at Wolf's Flea Market on Rand Road in Palatine from 8 to 4 p.m.
Greg, I found, my dad gave me one of the old little promotional radios of the Cubs and WGN, the little white radio.
Was it the one that had the preset only for WGN?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are awesome. I like finding those for every different radio station when it's just that one radio station. It's
Is there any value to that? Because obviously it's connected to 80s Cubs and everything about it.
I can say the ones that only have one radio station in them are worth more than where you can get all the radio stations in.
Interesting. And then a caller, 815 of Texas, says a classic Lou Manfredini Mr. Fix-It hat.
Hat? If he signs it, I don't know, $25,
$30.
Well, spike hats are worth more than that, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure spike hats
really?
Are.
I got a stack of them in my drawer in the
office. You still sell them.
Well,
what about the orange Bob Collins hats? You know what I'm talking about? Those trucker hats at the
The trucker are in style, the snapback hats.
Elizabeth is on the phone. What item do you have, Elizabeth?
Well, it's kind of like a group. It's a Pullman hat, a conductor's hat, the clicker, the stamper, whatever they would click the tickets with, and the original flashlight and a stool. And we actually have a chair from the Pullman cars.
Wow.
Pullman be cool cars. If you had the train.
Yeah, that's all you're missing.
Yeah. What's that little collection worth?
I can't even put a price on that, but it's, I'd say an auction starting at $300 maybe.
That's a good start.
Ooh, that's brag worthy, I'd say.
Yeah, that's good. A good start. Sure. Let me go to Drew. All right, Drew, talk to me. Drew, what do you got?
So I called in probably about a month ago. I've got a Fantasia poster from the re-release in the 1970s when they were trying to get all the hippies back into the theater. And this was actually hanging up in the theaters, very psychedelic, very cool. So original from the 1970s.
Hippie poster.
Disney hippie poster. I'm thinking it's going to be $350 to start.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you people. Stepping up. Let me get one more here. This is Carrie in Sycamore. Carrie, what do you got?
Hey, guys. I'm never going to sell this, but I was always curious what it might be worth. My uncle in the 80s worked at
Wrigley
Field. And they did some renovations at the park, and they were throwing out a bunch of stuff. And he went through some stuff, and the scoreboard clock, the iconic round clock, was added in the early 40s. It wasn't original. I have a blueprint for the clock.
Wow.
And I've gotten crazy things like it's only worth what somebody will pay for it, or you should insure it for like $5,000. I have no idea.
Right. I would definitely start that at like $500 auction.
Okay.
And you're not going to find anything like it. And
right.
There's definitely couple Cubs fans that will bid that thing up, I'm sure.
It's a tremendous the value of it, just knowing what it became, right?
Yeah, it'd be great to just frame that and have that hanging in your room.
Here's the good news. We don't have to pick one. Everybody wins.
There you go.
Everybody wins. Elizabeth,
awesome.
Tram, Drew, Carrie, Glenn, you all win tickets to the prices, right? And go ahead and get yours starting tomorrow. So, Greg, great to see you, man.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Ticketmaster.com, ChicagoTheater.com for those tickets. You can hear Walter's perspective at WGNRadio.com. It's sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. And by the way, it's time for us when we come back to find out what happened to Pete. Pete, come on in and face the music. If you can walk. It's 927.
Can he talk is the question.
Walk, talk, same problem. 927, headlines coming too on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
We have no time for anything left on this show, and poor Pete yesterday was nearly killed in his appearance at Northwestern. Is Pete in there? In Northwestern University.
I feel like we're having another show meeting on the air.
Really? Larry Wirt is going to join us in a few minutes to talk about Warner Saunders and the Chicago Blackhawks, John Hayden, coming up before 10 o'clock. So yesterday we were at Northwestern, and we want to thank the whole Northwestern University family again. The whole premise was kind of tied to the football team, and we wanted to try our team out in their incredible facility. And things are going well. Dave, you and I were co-coaching this team.
Yes, I was very much an assistant.
You were coach broadcasting.
Letting you handle.
You were broadcast coach.
Yes,
coaching.
I was calling the plays.
And, we were running through some drills. And at one point, one of the drills involved Justin and Pete tethered together. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that?
Well, it's bungee. It's bungee training.
Yeah. The bungee training involved both of you wearing this bungee cord that was attached how? Velcro?
Yeah, it was like a harness, and we had a hard time. We were all trying to figure out how to actually get into it, but it's a harness that velcros in the belt, and then
look like a sumo wrestler.
Yeah, exactly. Mary was there. It was like a sumo wrestling. That's what you said. It's like a diaper. So we were trying to get in there.
By the way, they were wearing pants.
Yeah. and the idea is you run opposite from each other, and it like gets you stronger in your legs or something.
Or one person stays stationary.
Correct. Yeah, right. One person stays stationary, the other person runs. And when Justin says we were having a hard time, obviously he was having a hard time. Yeah. Mine was
perfectly adhered.
Yeah, there was some carelessness, I believe, on Justin's end.
Well, because here's what happened. Justin and six others. Dave Ennett was standing right there, too.
I was standing there, but I wasn't participating.
I was like, I don't know, I said,
we'll do this where Justin runs. And then, like, letting go of a rubber band where somebody gets snapped. I said, there's an alligator clip on your belt, Pete. Let go of the alligator clip. Yeah. He'll fall. It'll be really funny.
Yeah.
And you were in on the plan.
I was like, how do you want this pratfall, coach?
Yeah.
Like, that's where we went through it because it was going to be filmed the whole bit.
However, once the stretch of the bungee reached its peak, your belt popped off.
The Velcro just totally just flew open. And it was something completely unexpected, sending me to the ground.
It's a great
but
video.
It also, in rubber band elastic style, means that it shot back at the guy who was providing the resistance, which was Pete.
And Pete was struck, and we've tested this. We looked behind the grassy knoll. We've looked at the film many times. Mm-hmm. Pete was struck in a very sensitive area. How are you today?
I'm feeling okay.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
A lot of ice last night?
I took a lot of ice bath.
This was invigorating. This was America's Funniest Videos funny because it was such a distance we were at.
That could be a $10,000 winner.
We were 5-10 yards apart. So the fact that elastic rubber band like resistance cord flew back at a huge speed and hit you right in the nether regions is perfect. And it was captured on video.
Well, that's the thing too. Like I don't remember too much about it. I remember like Justin kind of running away from
that happens with trauma hits.
And then I remember seeing this thing come shooting at me at a blistering speed.
Sure.
I'm like, I'm not going to get out of the way of this thing. And then I remember kind of rolling on the ground and like nobody's rushing up to help me.
Well, we thought Justin got injured. It looked more
mine
like
was more professional.
Justin got injured.
Oh, I see where we stand.
We saw his boxer briefs.
I think that's because I'm a pro.
I took charge when I said, someone help Pete.
But everybody thought it was fake because that was the goal of the video was a pratfall.
Yeah.
So they thought you were just committing to the bit.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out you could have been killed.
Yeah, I don't think everybody thought it was fake.
No, you and I knew.
Then why didn't anyone run over to help Pete?
Right,
no, because there were other people closer.
Lee Harvey Oswald? Where were you?
Yeah. I was on the ground. What are you talking about?
Yeah. It wasn't something a girl should do.
I guess
one of you boys should have stepped up.
It was in a sensitive part of my body, so I understand the trepidation to come over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was a shoulder, like, oh, you okay? But like, oh, I'm hunched over.
Well, I wasn't, I wasn't
writhing on the grass.
Wasn't planning on applying first aid.
There's a lot of writhing.
We all could have come over and maybe done more. Listen, I'm just glad you're alive.
I did hear Adam. I think Adam Hoag. I vividly remember him saying, like, boy, I hope somebody got that on tape. That was like what I remember.
And by the way, he's retweeted it like 50,000 times.
It really does have it is a guffaw. It is a laugh out loud.
It's a moment.
The 11-year-olds in our ensemble, they loved it. Everyone went crazy for it.
It's a total moment.
Yeah. We are viral sensations, Pete.
Check it out where, Sandberg?
WGMradio.com.
Pete, thanks for coming in today. You certainly didn't have to, and we look forward to you filing the paperwork and suing Justin.
It's now known as the Ryan Walter Zimmerman Athletics.
Exactly right. So. Enjoy your ownership.
Thank you.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
9:44 is great. A history of radio in this town that we have, and the great radio personalities have been on the radio stations in this town forever. We get some amazing, legendary television folks as well. And sad to note that Warner Saunders died on Tuesday. Had a heck of a life. 82, I believe.
83.
And Anna DeVlantis said a nice tweet about it last night. I'm sure she'll talk about it with Ro if she didn't already do that yesterday. But I wanted to ask our boss, Larry Wirt, to come on because Larry ran Channel 5 for all those years. And Warner Saunders and Allison Rosati were his lead anchors. Good morning, Mr. Wirt.
Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Thanks for coming on. Favorite Warner Saunders memory?
Oh, gosh. We spent about a dozen years together over at Channel 5. And we had our share of the good, bad, and ugly ones together. I guess this isn't the most fun memory, but what stands to mind for me is we had a couple sportscasters. Some of the audience might recall Darian Chapman.
Yep.
And a guy named Daryl Hawks. They were both, you know, young guys, both 37, both ironically from Buffalo, New York, both sportscasters, and they both passed away suddenly.
Right.
And it was a shock to the newsroom, both of them. And Warner was just steadfast and helpful and supportive during those times. I had to give those eulogies, and they were, you know, very difficult, to say the least. And these guys, families, children, et cetera, and just left us too soon. And Warner was just, he was a strong family member at that time.
Just a rock, a guy you could lean on.
He really was. Yep, he was in stature and presence, but he was emotionally and intellectually as well. You know, I got that job because the guys before me put Jerry Springer on to do editorials on the late news, and Carol Marine and Ron Majors left, and Warner was put in this chair with Allison Rosati, and many thought it would be temporary. And, you know, when I got there, I determined, along with some other managers, that probably the most important thing was to have stability from people that were, you know, known and trusted a bit. So Warner and Allison partnered and stayed there for quite a while. Allison, obviously, still there. We worked our way to number one position with those guys, and Mike Adamly and Brant Miller was also still there. And it was a team I'm proud of.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk, maybe even pressure, to switch that up as Warner got older, even though he looked great, by the way. What was it about him as an anchor that wanted to keep him in the chair?
Well, look, he earned his spot there, and we were performing well. And, of course, you always talk about succession, but, you know, we actually had Mark Sapelsa in the chair to succeed potentially, and then he went over to Fox, which is another interesting story. But you know, Warner, we just picked the right time, and it was a very successful career. The guy was a sportscaster; he was a community activist, and then just a successful career as a journalist and anchor. Sad to hear that you know, we lost him.
Larry, how important was it to have somebody like Warner? When you talk about a community activist, someone who was around young journalists at the time and young broadcast journalists, how important was it to have someone like Warner Saunders in your newsroom?
You know, he assumed the role of leadership, and he lived up to it. When I think about him, you know, look, there are always agendas, and Warner was fair. He was outspoken, but he was fair. I think about the union discussions and debates that were had, and Warner was always objective and fair, and he listened, and he didn't just fall in line. And, you know, we all respected him for it. And, like, there's, in Chicago, our anchors, our reporters, our journalists, they're just a little more high profile than maybe some other markets,
right?
Big markets, and I think that Warner outperformed many expectations. I think you're right. Some thought there's no way that's temporary. They should not have that job, and they didn't earn it. Right? They got it under duress, and they proved, you know, Warner specifically proved people wrong, I think.
Yeah, well, 12 years, that's a pretty good part-time gig. Anna said yesterday that he was incredibly patient with people coming up in the newsroom and very helpful and had the long vision of seeing the next generation of folks. Did you witness that as well?
I certainly did. You know, he really did mentor. That was important to him. He not only mentored the young up-and-comers, but he mentored some of the grown-ups that needed some mentoring, too. You know, when there was chaos, he was always a calming force. And, again, you can only do that if people respect you.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I think he had that in our newsroom.
It's Larry Wirt, the boss of this joint. Previously, he was the boss of Channel 5, and you should return now to running our company.
Thanks. Right. Thanks, which is not part-time either.
Thanks.
All right, see ya.
Thanks for coming on, man. Larry Wirt with some memories of Warner Saunders. And, you know, I mean, it is sad that he's gone, but that's a good run. That's a busy life. Big dude, too. Is he an athlete?
He seemed that way.
Yeah.
He had that presence about
him. Walked like an athlete.
Yeah. And he was very comfortable, as I mentioned to Justin earlier.
Sports guy.
I first met him when he was out covering sports. I mean, that's when I got to know him, and he was very comfortable in that realm. You know, he knew guys and seemed right at home.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Now Hayden intercepts the puck, wheels down the left wing side to the net, shoots, he scores! A shorthanded goal for John Hayden!
Let's go.
3, 2, 1. The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Breakfast of the Blackhawks, sponsored again by MB Financial Bank. We got a question from a Blackhawks fan in a second. Welcome, John Hayden. Morning, John.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on, buddy. You know, I remember when you were lighting it up at camp last year, and everybody said, watch for Hayden, man. Hayden's coming. It seems like your time is now, my friend.
I think we've had a good start to the season. And for me, I just wanted to come in and have a strong training camp. Unfortunately, I was playing with a couple of guys that I played with both last year and in Rockford, so there's some chemistry already, and it was a fun start.
So what do you see as your role on this team?
I think, you know, right now I can bring an element of energy, enthusiasm, physicality, and add that offense. For me, it's just about getting better every week and better every year, and I think I'm better than I was last training camp, so I want to just stay on that trend.
6 feet tall, 223 pounds, yeah. Dave. He could kill both of us with his bare hands.
Yes, he could, and we were talking to Coach Q yesterday about the idea that, and he was pointing out that the trend in the NHL now has been, instead of going for the big guys, the small, speedier guys, uh-huh. And you're seeing all this goal scoring. Do you see it that way, John? Is there any reason you think all these pucks are going in right now? Not just the Blackhawks, but around the league.
Well, there's definitely a an influx of speed and skill, so that's something that I try to address every summer and throughout the year to keep working on that. And if I can be a unique player in that I'm big and I can provide the speed and offensive element, I think it'll help my case. So it's just something that I'll keep working on going forward.
Talking with John Hayden, Breakfast with the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. Breakfast with the Blackhawk question of the day from David Polensky. David says, how do you get motivated to play when you're tired and sore or maybe feeling down? Look, dude, you're 23. You don't get to be tired.
You're right. I am relatively young, so there isn't really a lack of motivation. But if anything, you look down at the crest on your jersey or the 20,000 Blackhawk fans that support us. It seems like through thick and thin, it's pretty easy to get excited to play. So, aside from that, the veterans do a pretty good job of keeping us dialed in, and I think that's helped us have such a successful start.
I'll let you go on this, but amongst the veterans, you know, the super old guys like Kane and Taves, who's the guy that gets in your ear most?
I'd say Siebes.
Seabrook?
Siebes is awesome. We have a pretty good relationship, and he doesn't hold back. But I started my NHL career playing on the line with Taser, and he helped me a ton on and off the ice. Just whether we were talking about systems or different on-ice plays or just how to acclimate to this league from college, which he did. He was a big help. But all those guys, Kaner, Dunks, Crow, I mean, I could go on. I have stories about all of them.
Yeah, well, that'll all be in your book, and that's years away. keep it up, John. Stay healthy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you guys very much.
All right, go get a win. David Polensky gets an autographed puck courtesy of MB Financial Bank. One of the management folks at MB is going to sign a puck for me.
That's what it's, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, an MB Financial sign?
I'll probably get a Blackhawk to sign it. Go to WGNRadio.com/contest. Submit your question for a chance to win on a future Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Bill and Wendy coming up and in the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You got your Doma T-Pongo next.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Bill and Wendy are here. Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning.
Was Willy Wonka here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Earlier.
That's got you written all over it. Why are you not going to
I got to go see that.
Why are you not starring in it?
I know. I want in.
You're Dave has a golden ticket on him right now, if you can find it.
All right.
Yes, I do. I'll find it. Can't look.
That's not a ticket.
And be careful for the paper cut. What are you guys doing today?
We're going to talk about, we're anti-vaping. So we're going to talk about that. That's all the kids do, and it's so silly. People who try to quit smoking vape, but kids who just start vaping because it's pineapple flavored, it's crazy. And there aren't enough studies to know what this is going to be.
Effects.
Yeah, like 10 years from now, it might be worse than smoking.
Local governments specifically are cracking down on that to at least come up with campaigns, public awareness campaigns.
What's the hook? You suppose you don't inhale anything?
Oh, you inhale it. It's just not smoke. It's vapor.
Generally speaking, outside of oxygen, anything you inhale, should probably be just oxygen.
Pretty much.
You would think. Well, we're starting a campaign, crepes, not vapes. Do you like that?
The commissioner of the Chicago Department of Health, Dr. Julie Morita, will be in. You can pitch her with that.
I'm going to throw that
out. It seems narrow to me. I'm not going to lie to you. It seems a little narrow.
And is Dean on our show today? Because I don't know if he's in flight. I don't know what Dean's schedule is.
We don't know if he's in New York. We don't know if he's here. But he did announce at the end of his segment an hour and a half ago that Jen Lyons has resigned again.
Again.
Wow. Yeah. During her party to welcome her back, she's left Jen Lyons again.
That's fast.
He is on with us, so we'll talk to Dean as well.
Oh, he is. We'll see. Tomorrow, we are at where?
We're at Mary's
Morning
Mix-Up.
Mary's Morning Mix-Up. Not a morning show. An actual diner.
The diner.
Oh, maybe I'll stop by on my way.
Yeah.
Do you know where that is?
I grew up in Brookfield.
Well, come by.
I'm the queen of Brookfield.
Come by.
Self-proclaimed.
Still
definitely come by. Are there any other
I should have invited Larry Wirt. He's not far from that.
He would go.
Yeah, Larry, come by tomorrow.
No, we want the queen of Brookfield.
Oh, you don't want Larry Wirt?
No, we don't.
Justin doesn't want you to come by.
Larry can stay. We need the queen of Brookfield to stop
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, go.